Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission, Justice Stevens, with whom Justice Ginsburg, Justice Breyer, and Justice Sotomayor join, concurring in part and dissenting in part. The real issue in this case concerns how, not if, the appellant may finance its electioneering. Citizens United is a wealthy nonprofit corporation that runs a political action committee, a PAC, with millions of dollars in assets. Under the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act of 2002, the BCRA, it could have used those assets to televise and promote Hillary, the movie, wherever and whenever it wanted to. It also could have spent unrestricted sums to broadcast Hillary at any time other than the 30 days before the last primary election. Neither Citizens United's nor any other corporation's speech has been banned. All that the parties dispute is whether Citizens United had a right to use the funds in its general treasury to pay for broadcasts during the 30-day period. The notion that the First Amendment dictates an affirmative answer to that question is, in my judgment, profoundly misguided. Even more misguided is the notion that the court must rewrite the law relating to campaign expenditures by for-profit corporations and unions to decide this case. The basic premise underlying the court's ruling is its iteration and constant reiteration of the proposition that the First Amendment bars regulatory distinctions based on a speaker's identity, including its identity as a corporation. While that glittering generality has rhetorical appeal, it is not a correct statement of the law, nor does it tell us when a corporation may engage in electioneering that some of its shareholders oppose. It does not even resolve the specific question whether Citizens United may be required to finance some of its messages with money in its PAC. The conceit that corporations must be treated identically to natural persons in the political sphere is not only inaccurate, but also inadequate to justify the court's disposition of this case. In the context of election to public office, the distinction between corporate and human speakers is significant. Although they make enormous contributions to our society, corporations are not actually members of it. They cannot vote or run for office. Because they may be managed and controlled by non-residents, their interests may conflict in fundamental respects with the interests of eligible voters. The financial resources, legal structure, and instrumental orientation of corporations raise legitimate concerns about their role in the electoral process. Our lawmakers have a compelling constitutional basis, if not also a democratic duty, to take measures designed to guard against the potentially deleterious effects of corporate spending in local and national races. The majority's approach to corporate electioneering marks a dramatic break from our past. Congress has placed special limitations on campaign spending by corporations ever since the passage of the Tillman Act in 1907. We have unanimously concluded that this reflects a permissible assessment of the dangers posed by those entities to the electoral process, and have accepted the legislative judgment that the special characteristics of the corporate structure require particularly careful regulation. The court today rejects a century of history when it treats the distinction between corporate and individual campaign spending as an invidious novelty born of Austin versus Michigan Chamber of Commerce, 1990. Relying largely on individual dissenting opinions, the majority blazes through our precedents, overruling or disavowing a body of case law, including FEC versus Wisconsin Right to Life, 2007, WRTL, McConnell versus FEC, 2003, FEC versus Beaumont, 2003, FEC versus Massachusetts Citizens for Life, Inc., 1986, MCFL, and California Medical Association versus FEC, 1981. In his landmark concurrence in Ashwander versus TVA, 1936, Justice Brandeis stressed the importance of adhering to rules the court has developed for its own governance when deciding constitutional questions. Because departures from those rules always enhance the risk of error, I shall review the background of this case in some detail before explaining why the court's analysis rests on a faulty understanding of Austin and McConnell and of our campaign finance jurisprudence more generally. I regret the length of what follows, but the importance and novelty of the court's opinion require a full response. Although I concur in the court's decision to sustain BCRA's disclosure provisions and join Part 4 of its opinion, I emphatically dissent from its principal holding. Part 1. The court's ruling threatens to undermine the integrity of elected institutions across the nation. The path it has taken to reach its outcome will, I fear, do damage to this institution. Before turning to the question whether to overrule Austin and part of McConnell, it is important to explain why the court should not be deciding that question. Scope of the case. The first reason is that the question was not properly brought before us. In declaring Section 203 of BCRA facially unconstitutional, on the ground that corporations' electoral expenditures may not be regulated any more stringently than those of individuals, the majority decides this case on a basis relinquished below, not included in the questions presented to us by the litigants, and argued here only in response to the court's invitation. This procedure is unusual and inadvisable for a court. Our colleague's suggestion that we are asked to reconsider Austin and, in effect, McConnell would be more accurate if rephrased to state that we have asked ourselves to reconsider those cases. In the district court, Citizens United initially raised a facial challenge to the constitutionality of Section 203. In its motion for summary judgment, however, Citizens United expressly abandoned that facial challenge, and the parties stipulated to the dismissal of that claim. The district court therefore resolved the case on alternative grounds, and in its jurisdictional statement to this court, Citizens United properly advised us that it was raising only an as-applied challenge to the constitutionality of BCRA Section 203. The jurisdictional statement never so much as cited Austin, the key case the majority today overrules. And not one of the questions presented suggested that Citizens United was surreptitiously raising the facial challenge to Section 203 that it previously agreed to dismiss. In fact, not one of those questions raised an issue based on Citizens United's corporate status. Moreover, even in its merits briefing, when Citizens United injected its request to overrule Austin, it never sought a declaration that Section 203 was facially unconstitutional as to all corporations and unions. Instead, it argued only that the statute could not be applied to it because it was funded overwhelmingly by individuals. It is only in exceptional cases coming here from federal courts that questions not pressed or passed upon below are reviewed. And it is only in the most exceptional cases that we will consider issues outside the questions presented. The appellant in this case did not so much as assert an exceptional circumstance, and one searches the majority opinion in vain for the mention of any. That is unsurprising, for none exists. Setting the case for re-argument was a constructive step, but it did not cure this fundamental problem. Essentially, five justices were unhappy with the limited nature of the case before us, so they changed the case to give themselves an opportunity to change the law. As applied and facial challenges. This court has repeatedly emphasized in recent years that facial challenges are disfavored. The normal rule is that partial rather than facial invalidation is the required course, such that a statute may be declared invalid to the extent that it reaches too far, but otherwise left intact. By declaring Section 203 facially unconstitutional, our colleagues have turned an as-applied challenge into a facial challenge in defiance of this principle. This is not merely a technical defect in the court's decision. The unnecessary resort to a facial inquiry runs contrary to the fundamental principle of judicial restraint that courts should neither anticipate a question of constitutional law in advance of the necessity of deciding it, nor formulate a rule of constitutional law broader than is required by the precise facts to which it is to be applied. Scanting that principle threatens to short-circuit the democratic process by preventing laws embodying the will of the people from being implemented in a manner consistent with the Constitution. These concerns are heightened when judges overrule settled doctrine upon which the legislature has relied. The court operates with a sledgehammer rather than a scalpel when it strikes down one of Congress's most significant efforts to regulate the role that corporations and unions play in electoral politics. It compounds the offense by implicitly striking down a great many state laws as well. The problem goes still deeper, for the court does all of this on the basis of pure speculation. Had Citizens United maintained a facial challenge and thus argued that there are virtually no circumstances in which BCRA Section 203 can be applied constitutionally, the parties could have developed through the normal process of litigation a record about the actual effects of Section 203, its actual burdens and its actual benefits on all manner of corporations and unions. Claims of facial invalidity often rest on speculation and consequently raise the risk of premature interpretation of statutes on the basis of factually bare-bones records. In this case, the record is not simply incomplete or unsatisfactory, it is non-existent. Congress crafted BCRA in response to a virtual mountain of research on the corruption that previous legislation had failed to avert. The court now negates Congress's efforts without a shred of evidence on how Section 203 or its state law counterparts have been affecting any entity other than Citizens United. Faced with this gaping empirical hole, the majority throws up its hands. Were we to confine our inquiry to Citizens United's as-applied challenge, it protests, we would commence an extended process of drawing and then redrawing constitutional lines based on the particular media or technology used to disseminate political speech from a particular speaker. While tacitly acknowledging that some applications of Section 203 might be found unconstitutional, the majority thus posits a future in which novel First Amendment standards must be devised on an ad hoc basis, and then leaps from this unfounded prediction to the unfounded conclusion that such complexity counsels the abandonment of all normal restraint. Yet it is a pervasive feature of regulatory systems that unanticipated events, such as new technologies, may raise some unanticipated difficulties at the margins. The fluid nature of electioneering communications does not make this case special. The fact that a court can hypothesize situations in which a statute might, at some point down the line, pose some unforeseen as-applied problems does not come close to meeting the standard for a facial challenge. The majority proposes several other justifications for the sweep of its ruling. It suggests that a facial ruling is necessary because if the court were to continue on its normal course of resolving as-applied challenges as they present themselves, that process would itself run afoul of the First Amendment. This suggestion is perplexing. Our colleagues elsewhere trumpet our duty to say what the law is, even when our predecessors on the bench and our counterparts in Congress have interpreted the law differently. We do not typically say what the law is not as a hedge against future judicial error. The possibility that later courts will misapply a constitutional provision does not give us a basis for pretermitting litigation relating to that provision. The majority suggests that a facial ruling is necessary because anything less would chill too much protected speech. In addition to begging the question what types of corporate spending are constitutionally protected and to what extent, this claim rests on the assertion that some significant number of corporations have been cowed into quiescence by FEC censorship. That assertion is unsubstantiated, and it is hard to square with practical experience. It is particularly hard to square with the legal landscape following WRTL, which held that a corporate communication could be regulated under Section 203 only if it was susceptible of no reasonable interpretation other than as an appeal to vote for or against a specific candidate. The whole point of this test was to make Section 203 as simple and speech-protective as possible. The court does not explain how, in the span of a single election cycle, it has determined the Chief Justice's project to be a failure. In this respect, too, the majority's critique of line drawing collapses into a critique of the as-applied review method generally. The majority suggests that even though it expressly dismissed its facial challenge, Citizens United nevertheless preserved it not as a freestanding claim, but as a potential argument in support of a claim that the FEC has violated its First Amendment right to free speech. By this novel logic, virtually any submission could be reconceptualized as a claim that the government has violated my rights, and it would then be available to the court to entertain any conceivable issue that might be relevant to that claim's disposition. Not only the as-applied facial distinction, but the basic relationship between litigants and courts would be upended if the latter had free rein to construe the former's claims at such high levels of generality. There would be no need for plaintiffs to argue their case, They could just cite the constitutional provisions they think relevant and leave the rest to us. Finally, the majority suggests that though the scope of Citizens United's claim may be narrow, a facial ruling is necessary as a matter of remedy. Relying on a law review article, it asserts that Citizens United's dismissal of the facial challenge does not prevent us from making broader pronouncements of invalidity improperly as applied cases. The majority is on firmer conceptual ground here. Yet even if one accepts this part of Professor Fallon's thesis, one must proceed to ask which as-applied challenges, if successful, will properly invite or entail invalidation of the underlying statute. The paradigmatic case is a judicial determination that the legislature acted with an impermissible purpose in enacting a provision, as this carries the necessary implication that all future as-applied challenges to the provision must prevail. Citizens United's as-applied challenge was not of this sort. Until this court ordered re-argument, its contention was that BCRA Section 203 could not lawfully be applied to a feature-length video-on-demand film, such as Hillary, or to a nonprofit corporation exempt from taxation under 26 U.S. Code Section 501c4 and funded overwhelmingly by individuals such as itself. Success on either of these claims would not necessarily carry any implications for the validity of Section 203 as applied to other types of broadcasts, other types of corporations, or unions. It certainly would not invalidate the statute as applied to a large for-profit corporation. There is no legitimate basis for resurrecting a facial challenge that dropped out of this case 20 months ago.